So we're in the book of Proverbs, and Proverbs, if you've been here before, is a book of advice for everyday life, and they're very short sayings generally, particularly chapters 10 to 31, and they're generally in quite a random order, so you'll see a little bit here, a little bit there, and what we've been trying to do on the occasions when I speak on Proverbs in an evening service is put them together in themes so that we can maybe reflect on what they teach us. Rid's very kindly put all the Proverbs onto the screen, so hopefully it'll be easier for you to follow, because we are going to be bouncing around a bit in our Bibles in a way that we don't normally do. Now, last week we looked at wisdom for kings and leaders, how a king or a leader is meant to behave. And this week we're going to look at it from the other side. We're going to look at how subjects of leaders, or we might say citizens, are to respond to those in authority. Now, two things that are important background, and they might be a little bit controversial potentially, but it's important to know as we come into Proverbs so we understand the setting of what is being said here. Firstly, I want to talk about what the Bible teaches about authority. Our culture is very anti-authoritarian. Most Westerners want to flatten all social hierarchies of any way, and the Bible just doesn't agree. Ultimately, the whole universe is a monarchy. God is the king, and everything else in the universe is his subject. And there are various other authorities, all of which are meant to be representative of God in certain relationships. So humans rule over animals and all of nature. Parents lead their children. Husbands lead their wives. Pastors lead their churches. Masters lead their servants. And most relevant for what we're going to talk about this evening, kings and governing authorities rule their citizens. Now, ruling in the Bible is very different to what we might think of. The idea is a service relationship where the one in the position of authority is meant to be giving of themselves for the good of the one being led. But generally speaking, the Bible is very positive about ruling authorities. There are a very few occasions where those in authority are ignored because they go against God's law. Like some of you might know the story of when Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego refused to bow to a statue of the king. That was a good reason to rebel. But as Westerners, we tend to rush towards those exceptions that give us the right to say, oh, forget those people in authority. Even in refusing to obey that sinful decree, they were still very respectful of the king when they spoke to him. And so we should come to this passage acknowledging that Proverbs assumes a lot of what we don't assume. It assumes that hierarchies are generally a good thing given by God to provide his leadership in various areas. Now, let me just quickly overview how this has looked in history, and this is going to be way oversimplifying it, but maybe it'll give you a bit of background. How has it worked when believers in God, have related to those who are in government over them? Well, I guess it depends on who has been in the government. So at the time of writing Proverbs, there is a king on the throne who worships God. And in the successive years, they've all nominally worshipped God. Whether they in particular have or haven't depends on the particular king. But there is this sense in which the king is meant to be a worshipper of God and meant to be upholding his law. But then a few years down the line, the country of Judah is invaded by a succession of nations, by Babylon, by Persia, by basically the Greeks and the Romans as well. And these outside authorities have often been trying to push believers to worship false gods or to do things that are against God's law. When Jesus came, the first Christians were under the Roman Empire, and they faced a lot of persecution for that. Not too dissimilar, in fact, sometimes a lot worse than what we saw in Bangladesh. And yet, despite that, the apostles are constantly telling the people they're writing to obey authorities, to honour the emperor, which is remarkable when you think that the emperor, when those commands were written, was generally Nero, who burned Christians in his garden parties and was the man who executed the vast majority of the apostles. That was the man they expected to be honoured. Around the 300s, when the Emperor Constantine became a Christian, in the West, there's always been a link between the church and the government until very recently. And a lot of Christians look back on that as the heyday. Oh, wasn't it brilliant when the church and politics were related? But it wasn't always that good. Rulers often pushed their vision of Christianity on others. Our church started in the 1700s, meeting secretly in a barn because King Charles II had decreed that non-Anglican churches couldn't exist. Although this changed later that century, the persecution continued. If you weren't in the Church of England, you couldn't be an MP until 1828, and you couldn't go to university until 1871. So when people hark back to the good old days when Christians ruled the country, you do wonder when exactly it was they were talking about. In the 20th and 21st century, as our country has grown more secular, Christianity has had less impact on the government. But in a sense, that's just returning to the norm. Christians are not citizens first of the United Kingdom or any other country. We are first and foremost citizens of heaven. And we hope to be as good citizens as we can on this earth. But the government that we're under will never line up perfectly with what the Bible teaches. It was the same for the Jews in Babylon, the Christians in Rome, the people who started our church in the 1600s rather than the 1700s under Charles II, and many more who paved the way before us. Our King Charles, Keir Starmer and others, they're definitely not perfect, but they are a lot better than Nebuchadnezzar and Nero. And they're better than Christians under horrific persecuting governments today, like we heard of before. Yet we're much more likely to have a generally disrespectful attitude towards authority. And we must remember, coming to this passage, what we're taught in Romans 13 verse 1. Let everyone be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. God has established authorities. They aren't perfect, but they do us good. So we're going to look at this, particularly in how it applies to us as citizens of the United Kingdom. You could apply these things into any of those authority relationships in home, workplace, and church, but our priority is going to be to think how we behave towards our government. And there are 8 principles for wise citizens in this passage. Wise citizens fear wrath. Wise citizens generally prosper. Wise citizens are truthful. Wise citizens do not rebel. Wise citizens are patient. Wise citizens know their place. Wise citizens never assume they know the king. And wise citizens look to the King of Kings. First of all, wise citizens fear wrath. Paul tells us in the book of Romans that one of the duties of a government is to wield the sword of judgment, to punish those who break laws. Whatever type of government you have around the world, if you murder someone, in the vast majority of countries, you will be punished. If you steal, you will be punished. That is the primary purpose for governments to exist. And if that's the case, wise people should fear the wrath of a government, the punishment of a government. Because if you are being punished by a government, generally you've done something incredibly evil. Proverbs 16 verses 14 to 15. A king's wrath is a messenger of death, but the wise will appease it. When a king's face brightens, it means life. His favour is like a rain cloud in spring. When a king is angry, it's a messenger of death. You can die. Obviously, in Solomon's time, that was generally true. So you should do what you can to please the king. Not because you're seeking to serve men, but because you're seeking to sin in a way that is upstanding and that keeps God's law. Proverbs 19 verse 12 is similar. A king's rage is like the roar of a lion, but his favour is like dew on the grass. Or Proverbs 20 verse 2. A king's wrath strikes terror like the roar of a lion. Those who anger him forfeit their lives. It's wise to avoid angering a king who holds your life in his hands. And if we apply that to our situation, it's wise for us to fear breaking the law and the punishments that would go with it. Now you might say, well, what if the king's anger is unjust? And there are definitely examples of that in the Bible. We mentioned one before, Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego, who refused to bow to a statue and were thrown into a fiery furnace. Or you might think of the apostles being told in the early church to stop speaking about Jesus by the ruling authorities. Sometimes we do have to take the anger of a human leader because we serve God. But in most situations, that isn't the case. Because most laws in our country are just. They are stopping us from doing sinful actions. Proverbs 16:12 holds up a principle for us. Kings detest wrongdoing, for a throne is established through righteousness. Wrongdoing is no good for any country, and therefore those in authority should always hate it. If we please kings, if we please those in authority, ultimately, are we keeping God's law? Generally speaking, and that's always the caveat that goes with. So we should have a healthy fear of breaking our country's law. We shouldn't wantonly break the speed limit because we think it's a stupid 20-mile-an-hour speed limit around here. Or ignore the laws on child protection because they don't help children be protected anyway. No, we should not be dismissive of any law over us, but we should instead respect it. Secondly, if we do that, Proverbs has good news. Wise citizens generally prosper. And I'm always going to be adding those kind of adverbs, generally, most of the time, in the general course of things, because that's what Proverbs is about. Generally speaking, there is a sense in which if you are living a life that is honouring to God, you will also be a benefit to the society around you. Think about the life of Daniel, if you know that Bible story. He comes as a captive from Babylon's invasion of Jerusalem. By the time he dies, he has been the right-hand man of successive kings and dynasties. There were definitely some low points, the lowest perhaps being thrown into a lion's den. But generally, he was in good positions within the government because, living as a righteous man, he was a great blessing to that king. Proverbs encourages us that wise citizens generally do pretty well. Proverbs 14:35, a king delights in a wise servant, but a shameful servant arouses his fury. A wise man keeping the wisdom of Proverbs will be a delight to the king. Proverbs 22 verse 11 goes even further. One who loves a pure heart and who speaks with grace will have the king for a friend. It's not the case that nice guys always finish last. Respectful people tend to do well in all areas of life. This, of course, doesn't mean there's no room for skill. Some people are godly, but they're not very competent, and so they don't rise to the top of a pile. But Proverbs wants to tell us even there, we can generally trust it to be the case that skilled people will be put into good positions. Proverbs 22 verse 29. Do you see someone skilled in their work? They will serve before kings. They will not serve before officials of low rank. As Christians, there are times when we will be looked down on for our beliefs. That definitely happens. But we should also not be surprised if Christians generally do well in their life. In fact, what often happens in times of revival is that the area where a revival happened, where lots of people became Christians at once, generally does better economically. People start to get better jobs. They start to become more educated because in serving God, they're becoming generally good citizens of the world around them. Those who serve well will gain positions of influence and deserve it. Wisdom, a lot of the time, results in being pleasing to those in leadership. Now, one particular character trait is emphasized by the Proverbs. Wise citizens are truthful. Proverbs 17:17, eloquent lips are unsuited to a godless fool. How much worse lying lips to a ruler. It's always a shame when godless fools are eloquent. There are some people who are great speakers and they're saying that we should disobey God's law and they get a hearing because they're just so eloquent, and that's a shame. But it's even worse, the writer of Proverbs says, when a ruler is lied to. It's hard enough to run a country as it is without being told lies by those around you. But you might say, well, isn't there a chance for men to surround a king telling him what he wants to hear, or a prime minister or whoever it may be? Well, of course. And yet, as a general principle, Proverbs 16:13 tells us, kings take pleasure in honest lips. They value the one who speaks what is right. Elsewhere in Proverbs, it tells us the value of people who tell the truth, even when it's hard. And that's particularly important if you're making big, important decisions. So as Christians, when we engage with governments, we must tell the truth, even when the truth isn't convenient. When we're at work, dealing with those above us, we should be scrupulously honest. Now, in the short term, that may lead us to lose out. But in the long run, an honest person is valued by his or her superiors. They want to know the truth. We're also told why citizens do not rebel. Proverbs 24:21-22. Fear the Lord and the King, my son, and do not join with rebellious officials, for those too will send sudden destruction on them, and who knows what calamities they can bring. Rebel against the king? No, you have both God and the king to fear. Now, of course, this is a world where God had appointed the king, but nonetheless, it's a good principle. We shouldn't be seeking rebellion. Proverbs 28 verse 2 warns us what happens in rebellion, and it isn't good. When a country is rebellious, it has many rulers, but a ruler with discernment and knowledge maintains order. Now, the danger of a rebellion is that it just scatters things and makes things even worse. On the other side, if you defend your leader, he will honour you. Proverbs 27 verse 18, the one who guards a fig tree will eat its fruit, and whoever protects their master will be honoured. You might remember when we did the book of Esther, and we heard how Mordecai saved the life of Xerxes and was honoured as a result. That's generally the way that it works. If you save someone's life, they're normally pretty happy with you. Now, I realise saying why citizens don't rebel can cause all kinds of concerns. Some of us have family in countries where meeting at church is seen as an act of rebellion. And we might wonder if it would not be godly for a Christian to seek to overthrow various dictators. I planned this sermon before one such dictator was killed over the course of the weekend. And I'm not particularly making any point on that. Remember, Proverbs are principles rather than hard, fast rules. But we should really be cautious about any act of rebellion, because there's always a temptation to want to push yourself forward and your views rather than doing what is right. Now, of course, in our country, we have a democracy. You can oppose a prime minister. You can vote him out. We've had occasions where Scotland had the opportunity to vote to become independent. No such free votes are rebellion. They're given by the ruling authorities to make a genuine decision. But rebellion in this context is really using violence to force a political change. And as Christians, we're to avoid using violence to achieve our ends. But that might cause us a lot of concern. If we don't rebel, well, how are we ever going to see a change? Well, fifthly, wise citizens are patient. Proverbs 25, verse 15. Through patience, a ruler can be persuaded, and a gentle tongue can break a bone. If you're a Christian, when you look at our society, there will be things which will rightly cause you frustration. We're right to be frustrated about laws permitting assisted dying, abortion and the like. We shouldn't ignore these things, but we are to be patient. We are to want to change things, but we're to do so with the wisdom that takes time to try and make it more likely to happen. I was once speaking to someone who was working for CARE, and he shared how a Christian MP had once told him that he had found an aide in his, whatever you call the offices of an MP, he'd found one of his aides in tears. And what had caused this young woman to burst into tears was a series of very aggressive emails from Christians complaining of things that this MP's party had done that were wrong decisions. They weren't gentle and winsome, which would be more than suitable. No, they were actually quite cruel. And this young woman was gutted that all the hard work they'd done to move the needle on various issues, getting it slightly towards what is good, had been ignored. And they were only getting these complaints about what is evil. Now, if you're in leadership, that kind of sometimes goes with the territory. It's always a lot easier to see the things that could be done rather than to make them happen. But for Christians, we need to realise, particularly when we're engaging with those who are unbelievers, that we might have to be patient as we try to win them round, especially when they don't come with the same set of principles that we do. Now, that doesn't mean that we're to sit back and say, oh, well, who cares about all these unjust laws? But rather, we're to work in such a way that we can slowly but surely turn things for good. Wise citizens also know their place. It's easy being around those in authority to get ideas above your station. Proverbs 23 verses 1-3 give this warning. When you sit down to dine with a ruler, note well what is before you, and put a knife to your throat if you are given to gluttony. Do not crave his delicacies, for that food is deceptive. Saying it can be very tempting when you meet people with power and wealth to just want anything, to do anything that will get you to keep those luxuries. And sadly, that leads many people to make evil decisions. We've seen it in some recent political scandals, how easy it was for people to be deceived by wealth and power. How many people covered for the Epsteins of this world because they liked the wealth and pleasures he could convey. Solomon warns us not to be given into gluttony or any other lust that we can get from those in authority. Be happy to be a servant and don't scramble to get the gifts that come from being high up the pyramid. It seems Proverbs 30:21-23 conveys a similar idea. Under three things the earth trembles, under four it cannot bear up. A servant who becomes a king, a godless fool who gets plenty to eat, a contemptible woman who gets married, and a servant who displaces her mistress. Now, I've got to say, there's a lot of things in those verses which we might find hard to understand. But I think the idea is this. It is wrong when social hierarchy is upended. In our upperly mobile world, we might wonder what the problem is with a servant becoming king. But in that culture, for a servant to become a king, he's probably backstabbed his way quite literally into power, as the crown should have been passed from one generation to the next. It seems the focus here is on one who shouldn't have power gaining power through some sort of unjust means. Perhaps we could put it like this. Isn't it frustrating when fools who are unqualified for a position end up in authority? And we need to make sure that isn't us. We need to know our place. We need to know that actually we couldn't run a country. And we're quite glad that there's other people who are a bit wiser than we are. Some will never be satisfied in the position they're in work or in church or in home or in society. They'll always want to get up. We should know whether it's with status or with food, what our place is, and be happy with what we have and try to honour God in it. Seventhly, wise citizens never assume they know the king. As the heavens are high and the earth is deep, so the hearts of kings are unsearchable. It's impossible to always know what a particular person thinks. I've always been quite interested in history. I can't help but think of the court of Henry VIII. Various advisors, all called Thomas confusingly, would come in and they thought they could play Henry VIII, and then they'd end up with their heads being chopped off because they'd got things wrong. Thankfully, whatever you think of our king and his government, they're not like that. But still, we must be careful of thinking we know the hearts of those in leadership. It's good to have a certain humility. Sometimes we might assume a leader is better than they really are. Sometimes we might assume a leader is worse than they really are. Unlike the Lord, we cannot know the dealings of another man's heart. So we should approach any such attempts with humility, not assume that we know everything. But finally, wise citizens look to the King of Kings. All that we've seen is very, very hard if you live under a completely unjust ruler. And let's be frank, the majority of Christians in history have lived under unjust rulers. Indeed, every Christian has a sinner as their ruler, so we're always going to look at this and think, oh, do I really have to submit to that person? Do I really have to do that to that kind of leadership? Proverbs emphasized repeatedly that the Lord is the true king, and that enables us to have confidence even under the most unjust rulers. Proverbs 21 verse 1. In the Lord's hand, the king's heart is a stream of water that he channels towards all who please him. Water is a great illustration of God's sovereignty. Water's just always going to go downhill, doesn't it? And if you imagine that the king's heart is like water, it's always going to go downhill towards whatever the king desires. But a human's more intelligent than water, and so we can build up walls to channel water to go the direction we want it to go. And in the same way, God is more powerful than the king. So even though the king truly does have these desires in his heart, God is able in his sovereign power to channel that in a wonderful direction. So a great example of this from Israel's history is a man called Cyrus. The Jews were in exile in Babylon. Cyrus invades Babylon. And then he decreed that the Jews could go back to Jerusalem, and all the things that were stolen from the temple they could take back with them. Now, it wasn't that Cyrus was a believer and that he really wanted to honour God. He just thought it would win him favour with his new subjects and discourage them from rebelling against him. But that sinful desire in his heart, God managed to cut a path so that it would turn out for good. Or in our country, again, you can think of Henry VIII. He was such a solid Roman Catholic that the Pope gave him the title Defender of the Faith for his arguments against Martin Luther. But he caused England to break with Rome. Now, the reason that he wanted that was because he wanted Anne Boleyn to be his wife. Not a very good reason. But God was able to channel those sinful desires to mean that our country has been a pretty good place to be a Christian for many, many years. And that's why we can pray for God to change the hearts of rulers. We don't necessarily need believers in office. God can change the hearts of even the worst people. But of course, there are no guarantees in this life. In a sinful world, there will always be wrong decisions. There will always be laws that we would hope to be changed. Proverbs 29:26 speaks particularly about justice. There may be times that you want justice and it doesn't seem to come. But this proverb tells us, many seek an audience with a ruler, but it is from the Lord one gets justice. We may want to see justice by a judge or in a court of appeals or whatever, but ultimately God is the judge and he will bring true justice to the world. So there's a lot to take in there, and I can't say that I've fully taken on board exactly all the implications of this for how we behave, but these are 8 guidelines that guide us in how to behave towards those in authority. First, we are to fear wrath. Governments rightly punish evil by laws. We are to fear punishment and we're to seek to avoid it. Second, we should recognise that the wise generally prosper. There are challenges for Christians in our country, but over the general course of things, if we are wise, we should be a blessing to our country, not a curse. Thirdly, we should be truthful. God is a God of truth, and we must be men and women of truth as well. That means we may need to speak uncomfortable truths to those in authority. Fourthly, we're not to rebel. We're not to be in the business of violently overturning governments. We're to leave that to God and try to do our best to do what is right. Fifth, we're patient. We know that changing authorities is always a challenge, and we're willing to be patient in doing what is good. Sixthly, we know our place. We aren't desperate to take over positions of power or to get wealth. We're willing to function humbly wherever we may be in society. Seventhly, we don't assume to know the king or anyone in authority. We're able to entrust the knowledge of our leaders to God and to work within that. And eighthly, and most importantly, we look to the King of Kings. We remember the universe is entirely under his sway, and in the end, he will bring justice on the earth. It will be far greater when the King of Kings return. We'll never have to question whether a ruler's decision is right and just. We won't ever have uncomfortable political conversations where one person thinks one thing and one thinks another. We won't have to play the system to get the ruler to do what is right. We won't be longing for a day when justice will finally come. But until that day, we're to be wise in our relationships to rulers. Perhaps that's respectfully writing to our MPs when they have a decision that could make a real difference in our country. It certainly is obeying the laws of the land, as long as they don't go against God's laws, which they very rarely do. And we'll also pray for our leaders regularly, even if we don't like them very much, even if we'd like them to change, because we could trust that God can even work through sinful men and women.